Hello and welcome to the Backmarker Podcast. My name is Braden.
And my name is Raj.
How you doing, Raj?
Hey, I'm really good, man.
Yeah, I think
how was your weekend?
Yeah, I was good. It was a good weekend. I watched a little bit of Le Mans. I know not as much as you, of course.
Yeah, I'm tired.
Yeah, still recovering. I watched a little bit of that. We'll talk a little bit about that later. You've got some information for me because I only got like a couple hours in. I think you got most of the race.
Yeah, I pretty much, like, except for the sleep in the nighttime, which is actually the afternoon hours of Le Mans.
Mm.
So I woke up just to say we're entering kind of the nighttime section.
Awesome. All right, looking forward to talking about that. We're also going to talk about Baku, or the Azerbaijan Grand Prix, which is this weekend.
Yes.
That's exciting. Let's just get straight into it because we're also going to go through some news. A lot of stuff to go through. So Raj, first impressions, what do you think about Baku?
Okay, like, honestly, I don't really like the track in a way. I do think it seems a bit tight, twisty, but not good tight and twisty. It seems contrived tight and twisty just because, you know, they've gone, the dictator in Azerbaijan, whatever. So I want to show off my city. Look at my city. It's your city's really cool, but I don't know. To me, the track's kind of crap. The racing has
it's more
not
of a
been
showcase,
great.
Really, like a showcase of of the
we
buildings.
We already have a showcase.
Yeah, Monaco.
Exactly.
It doesn't come up to the standard of Monaco. It's not quite as the doesn't quite have that prestige. Give it 75 years, maybe. I don't know. I don't see it happening
Get me wrong. Like, honestly, I wouldn't mind the comparison with Monaco if the racing was great, but the racing is not great.
Look, it's we don't have that much average to go on though. We've only had 1 year of it.
True.
A lot of fans have been saying the same thing as what you've said that I've seen online, but apparently last year, I didn't catch this, but I'm going to now have to go watch it. Apparently the GP2 race from last year, or the F2 race, was one of the best of their season last year.
No, it actually was. So it genuinely was.
The track itself may be capable of pulling out something. Maybe it's just the formula for last year wasn't quite there. I don't think they've made any major changes for this year in terms of the tracks. They haven't added like a chicane, as far as I'm aware, anything weird like that.
No, not as far as I know.
The turn around the tower is so tight.
That is a cool turn. Okay, that is the one turn where I'm like, okay, that is rad.
Looks really cool because you get to see that really old school tower right next to these amazingly brand new F1 cars, but it's so skinny. You've added extra wide cars this year.
That's what I was about to mention.
You know what? I thought about it last year. If a car gets taken out there or hits the wall, you're going to have to red flag the race. You've blocked the entire road. It is very hard to, like, there's not much, there's going to be a problem there.
You've got a good point, because it's not along the pit straight either, so you can't even get the cars going down pit road.
I think there's a very good chance that there'll be a red flag at that point, because, I mean, these cars are wider than normal. It's already one of the tightest points of the race.
That
could
be
something.
That's a good prediction right there, actually,
I got two predictions already. That one, and my second one will be Lewis Hamilton's going to say to the fans on the podium, "You're the best fans in the whole of F1. Thank you so much." Because he says it every freaking time.
Every race. Yeah. Yep, guaranteed.
So that's my two predictions. There'll be a red flag, which we haven't seen this year yet, I don't think.
No.
No any red flags yet. And, Lewis Hamilton will claim that the Baku fans are the best of every single track on the calendar. I'll get quickly into... We don't have that much history of Baku, because, again, we only had it 1 year, which was last year. The lap record goes to Nico Rosberg. Pole position from last year was Nico Rosberg, and he won the race. Followed by Sebastian Vettel and then Sergio Perez. So notably a bit of an interesting podium last year, even though it wasn't the greatest, most interesting race.
Yeah.
But maybe this year we'll see something a little more interesting in terms of the podium positions. And probably with that straight, we're going to see the lap record destroyed by these cars.
With that straight, you were going to see the lap record. No, you know these cars are slower in a straight line. Right?
I don't know. You reckon, yeah? Really?
Is that
actually true? They look faster. Maybe it's the camera angles and whatnot.
Only
they will look faster.
Corners.
That's my prediction then. They will look faster down the straight with the camera angles and whatnot.
Just think about it. Like, I mean, just quickly and logically, right? You've got the exact same engines with more downforce.
Yeah, it's the aero that's taking around the corners.
Faster.
Yeah, sure.
Exactly.
Fair enough. You do have some twisty corners, though. I do think the sector three of this track is interesting. The rest, I agree, not super interesting. The third sector leading up to that straight, got some interesting turns, and I do really like playing it on F1 2016 on the Xbox. It's a lot of fun to play, even though the actual race wasn't that interesting. I always have a good time of it when I'm playing it.
Dude, if all the drivers like kind of went, you know what, we're gonna drive PlayStation style, the race would be awesome.
Yes. Well, do you want to keep going into predictions? We'll do some actual predictions pole and whatnot. Let's start with that. Who do you think is gonna be on pole? Do we see Mercedes continuing their resurgence or back to a Ferrari? Someone else? What do you reckon?
I think I think it'll be even closer than Montreal, to be honest, between the Ferraris and the Mercedes, purely because their development is kind of coming to a head. Mm. And yeah, I don't know. The length of the straight makes me think that it probably will be Hamilton on pole.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's a very good point. That Mercedes engine just seems to have it no matter what.
That extra little bit in quali, especially.
Mm. Yeah, so Hamilton on pole is probably a good call.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Bottas.
Yeah, go for it.
I do think Mercedes is going to be up there.
I'd love to see Valtteri pull out a pole, as you know.
Yeah, I just don't think Hamilton has... Like, last year in Canada, he's great in Canada. He's always been there. He doesn't have that same experience in Baku. No one really does. No. So even... They've raced it last year. There's still a lot of unknowns for a lot of these drivers, which I think is why we saw someone like Perez up on the podium last year. You kind of got a clean slate in terms of experience. There's not too many people who can say they're the master of Baku yet. So I think someone like Bottas with an engine behind him could do something pretty damaging. Mm. What about for your 1, 2, and 3 then?
1, 2, 3. You know what? I'm going to go... I think Hamilton will pull off another win.
Mm-hmm.
I think Vettel will be in second. And I believe Bottas will pull out the end of the podium there in third.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm going to discard Raikkonen, to be honest.
I also think Hamilton's going to win, even though I think he's not going to get the pole. I think he'll probably still be on the front row. There'll be a strategy call from Mercedes or something that just favours him a little bit. He'll get a great start. There'll be something there. Bottas in second. And I'm hoping that Vettel comes in third just so we keep that championship sort of alive.
Yeah, for sure.
So I've got him in number 3. Safety cars, or in my case, I've already made the prediction that there's a red flag. So a safety car is probably going to be, safety car on a red flag. So I'm going to say at least one safety car and one red flag as well. So I'm making
around
a bold prediction.
Around the tower section there, it is hairy as hell, huh?
I know, it's so skinny and these cars are so wide.
Mm.
It's almost impossible to
see. It does seem like a really bad combination.
Yeah, I mean, even besides that particular corner with the tower, even the other ones... are very tight. Like, a lot of these turns are tight. Even the straight is not particularly wide, and there's walls everywhere.
It's
everywhere's
a medieval town. It literally looks like a medieval
zero
town.
Runoff. There's one runoff at the end of turn one, sort of. That's about it. That's the only runoff I can think of.
I reckon we'll see, you thought we'd see an incident first lap in Monaco.
Mm.
I think we're going to see an incident
first lap
here.
All right.
Purely because the first corner, it isn't like Saint-Devot. It's not, it hasn't
been right
done
angle,
a billion
basically,
times.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And it's a tightening corner.
Mm.
Everything about that corner is bad for close racing. So essentially, they're going to try to pass. They're going to try to get past. Someone's going to hit something.
And I mean, that corner, I know a lot of drivers talked about it last year, is like they don't realize how quickly it comes up on you.
Yeah.
So there was a couple of experienced drivers who would just straight up go into that one runoff area because they're going so fast down that straight for such a long time that left-hander at the full right angle just comes out of nowhere. So it's going to lead for some interesting racing in terms of that particular corner.
No, for sure. I think, lap one, if the midfield gets a little bit close together, that corner is gonna result in something. I think like the top six should be able to get through there without an issue, hopefully.
Yeah, and then we'll see some damage at the back. So one safety car then? Just the one?
No, I'm going to say two.
Two safety cars. All right, that'll make the race interesting in my opinion. If we have two safety cars at two different points in the race, if it's the beginning and halfway through, I think that's already a combination for a good race. So I'm not writing Baku off as some of the fans maybe already.
Oh, hey, if you like safety cars, do you want to introduce competition caution?
No.
Formula? Okay.
No, that's just shut up, IndyCar.
Sure, it was just an idea.
No, not at all. I just I think that if we can not cause safety cars, but if we can have racing that is, I don't know, I don't want to say we should cause safety cars because that's dangerous, but
do you know what I want from the racing this weekend? I want frenetic racing. I don't want calm. I want silly racing this weekend. Why? Because I really don't think it's possible to make that track quick without being silly.
Sure.
It you have to take risks around Baku. If anything, you have to take risks. And I'm willing to, I'm really wanting to see who's willing to take the most risk.
Yeah, sure. One thing I didn't actually mention here, some quick little facts. It's a 51-lap circuit, about 6 kilometers. And of course, it's in the old school town of Baku. So, if you haven't seen it from last year, don't even look at any pictures or spoilers. Just like, that's how I went into it last year. I didn't know much about this track. It looks really cool in terms of some
city.
Of the features and things. Hopefully they get some more crowds there. Apparently there wasn't very many tickets available last year. Like, Yeah, that's one thing I heard earlier this year was something that they were working on, actually getting enough seating and tickets available for people who want to see it. So yeah, it's probably a good problem to have as opposed to the other way around.
Yeah, but I mean, look, Azerbaijan, it's one of those leftover Bernie, let me schmooze up a dictator deals.
Just all for the money is why we're having
all for
race
the
there.
Money, not for the show. Yeah. I mean, hell, if they didn't even have enough grandstands, like,
it seemed a little bit, tacked together at the end. I mean, they didn't have very many sponsorships, which is, of course, why we see one of the greatest F1 memes, jokes.
Well done.
Yeah, well done, Baku. Do you think we see that again? I haven't seen any pictures of the track yet, but basically, if you don't know what that is, last year, they didn't have many sponsors around, so just half the track on all of Sector 3, it just says on every wall, well done, Baku.
Yeah. The best bit is when they were going past and they had the cameras out the side. Just, well done, Baku. Well done, Baku. Well done, Baku. Well done, Baku.
Yeah, so they don't have many sponsors. Hopefully they have something this year, but I kind of hope not because Baku's hilarious. Just well done, Baku, over and over and over again.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know where they would have picked up sponsorship. To be honest, they've changed their name from the European Grand Prix to the Azerbaijan Grand Prix.
That's good. I like that. That makes sense. More logical.
It is way more logical. And to be honest, if, you know, Azerbaijan's going to get anything out of this, it's tourism.
Yeah.
Right?
If you're in the area, maybe you want to pop over for the race, something like that. One question I have. Do you see Baku lasting much longer?
No.
Do you think, they don't do another deal after this one lapses? They got a few more years out of it. I know that they've put them on the provisional calendar for next year, which we'll talk about at some point this episode. Yep. But I don't see them lasting too much longer. I don't see Liberty feeling like they have a stake there, especially knowing that they want to push out into so many new markets and double their races in America and more Europe, all over the place. Mm.
When you got tracks like Zandvoort and Imola and all of these historic, brilliant circuits that F1 fans froth over, why would you go?
Exactly.
Why would you keep Baku?
And you want to go to America? Yeah, I don't see anyone in that meeting room going, but what about Baku? I'm a really big
Not gonna happen.
Let's enjoy it while we have it. It's probably okay. I don't, even if it might be that a little bit of a boring track, it's kind of got the novelty for a little while, and then if it goes away, I'm not going to be so sad.
If it produces a cork of a race this time, and it's in the calendar for next year, and it produces another corker, let's keep the damn thing. But as long as it's producing crap races, let's get rid of
them. No one really
cares. Let's
get
rid of it.
Look, we'll find out if it was a good race this time next week. Otherwise, let's just get straight into some news.
Let's do it.
All right, Raj, I've got some news, but I've also got a lot of rumours and gossip and things. Not much has actually happened in F1 definitively. There's just a lot of talk going around, it seems, this week.
Yeah, it's mid-year. This is when all of the silly season crap starts happening.
Really, because the beginning of the season, there was a lot of bullshit going around. So
it's true.
For them to top that could be interesting.
Oh, they will top it.
Yeah. I got one here. This has been a rumor that I've been like has kind of been circulating over the last few weeks. Kubica, of course, ex F1 driver. I've clearly stolen your story because you're giving me an angry look.
Yeah.
But we can talk about this. Look.
Yeah, let's do it.
My story wasn't actually that. It looks like he's getting a drive. There's a lot of speculation that Renault is going to be dumping Palmer, of course, because he's doing shit and his points are non-existent.
No, it was your story about the fact that he feels like he can drive an F1 car without limitation.
Well, yes, I've seen that. He, of course, did a bunch of testing in a couple of year old Renault.
In a 2012 Renault?
2012. Yeah, 2012 Renault. So he basically did a Grand Prix distance. His pace was there. Renault admitted that. He felt really, really good. The one thing I saw here was that guy you were talking about last week, the one you made the terrible pun about, Mr. Abitable.
Yep.
He's basically said, look, we don't want to get people's hopes up just yet because we're not quite sure if his move is actually going to be a tangible thing. He did really well. He's done a successful test out in Valencia. But, you know, I know that this sport is full of speculation and rumors and all these things. But I think in the present case, we need to be very careful what we're talking about an individual, when we're talking about an individual that we all love. It's a fantastic image, with a fantastic image, and has suffered a very difficult situation from his personal perspective, which of course was his crash in Rally, wasn't it?
In Rally,
So he's basically throwing a bit of water on this rumor fire at the moment, saying that he's returning. I would love to see it because everything I've seen from the past F1 stuff before I was really watching it, a lot of highlights and things, he seemed like a very talented driver. Everyone speaks highly of him. What do you think, Raj?
Man, I would love to see it too. First of all, I'd love to see the driver who Alonso once referred to as the best of all of us.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's big words.
That's a big call from what, you know, the driver many consider be the best of all of them. So, yeah, he was one of the most spectacular drivers on the grid. He was awesome.
Mm.
And I remember being stunned when he got into that rally accident. I remember being angry, actually, thinking, you dumbass. What? Why?
Mm. Yeah, that was a dramatic crash. Of course, it was dramatic. One of the most dramatic F1 crashes he was involved in, too.
Oh, God, yeah, Montreal.
He's like a magnet for some of the biggest crashes I've seen in the world of motorsports.
Yep.
So maybe Mr. Abitable here is saying, yeah, let's just like maybe not get him in a Renault because he's going to destroy it. Like, maybe, I don't know. I still think it's potentially going to happen, but we're going to have to see.
I have a quote here from him.
From Robert Kubica? Yeah, okay, yeah, what did he say?
He goes, I've been working a lot on my physical condition. I've never been so fit, even in my golden years when I was still competing in F1. For example, for the first time in my life, my body weight is lower than it was in 2008.
Wow.
Yeah, wow.
So that's when he was driving,
2008. That's when he was driving. That's when he joined F1, pretty much. It turned out that driving an F1 car is not as scary and remote as it seemed to be. I can even admit that an F1 car was one of the easiest machines to drive with my limitations after the accident. So that kind of confident, really overconfident talk, it sounds like he's making a move.
He's also admitting, like, yes, he had the injury and whatnot. Is it kind of a bit of a risk for Renault to pick up someone like him with his history and with his injuries? He's not exactly a young guy.
Yeah, he's not young.
He's got the experience on one hand, but I mean, would it be better for them to play their cards towards a younger, more developing driver? You've got Hülkenberg in there, of course, who doing a really good job.
Or Sergei Sorotkin.
Mm. Which, of course, is a Renault test driver.
Who Kubica outpaced in the test, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see him in there. It would be really great. But I don't see him there like for a long time.
Mm.
Maybe Renault are looking for something a bit more of a long-term investment. Palmer hasn't worked out in that.
I'd love them to take the punt. Love them to take that punt. And I think it would pay off, man. Mm. I think it would pay off big time.
I think it'll pay off more than Palmer, but that's not hard.
That's what I'm saying. Come on. Either put Sorotkin in there or put someone with skills
and
in that car.
And do it quickly, please.
Do it quick.
What about the idea that, I mean, there's still a lot floating around that Alonso could be going back to Renault?
Especially,
I mean, that's kind of along the lines of another story I'm sure we're going to talk about in a minute, which is what happens with McLaren next year. If those cards play out in a certain way, there's a chance Alonso loses it and just wants to go anywhere. Someone like Renault might want to pick him up, which may be why they're just going to hold off on making any decisions on removing Palmer at least till the end of the season, because you don't want to commit to someone like Kubica or any of their test drivers, and then at the end of the year say, actually, Alonso's taking your seat.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't be great.
Yeah, they don't want to make calls just yet. Everything's still playing out. So at the moment, just rumors and a lot of conflicting rumors at that.
Yeah,
so we'll see.
Definitely. I think we're going to see a lot more development in this season, but we'll just wait and see.
Yeah, we'll wait and see on that one. Raj, you got a news story?
I do. So, Vijay Mallya might be changing the Force India F1 team's name.
Yeah, I saw that. That's interesting. It would make sense. I mean, they've changed their livery. They've changed their sponsorship. Do you see it happening?
Yes, but not for the reasons you're probably thinking. Let me read you a quote I have here from Mallya. Where is it? No, it's not really a quote, but I'll just read out a bit of a passage.
Yeah.
Force India may undergo a name change as the current one is, according to the team boss, restrictive psychologically. Time will tell what the new name will be, but for now, one thing is commendable, that even after being entangled in court cases concerning humongous debt, being extradited back to India,
fleeing
to Britain, getting extradited, this, that, and the other, Vijay Mallya clearly hasn't taken his focus off F1. He clearly wants his team to get better and better. And this is a team, when he bought it, was a backmarker. He's lifted them up all the way to fourth in the constructors, a position which they hold right now.
Yeah, and doing very
quite
well.
Strongly. Yeah. But anyway, the reason why he wants to change the name is initially when he made the team, he wanted Indian sponsorship.
Yeah.
He wanted industry in India to rise up around him, and so it could truly be Force India.
And that's not really happening. I mean, they're sponsored by Kingfisher. They've got Kingfisher sponsorship.
But he owns Kingfisher.
Of course. That's the only... That was what I was about to say.
But they're also sponsored by BWM. Their new... The sponsor who made them pink.
Yeah, the German water treatment company or something.
Yeah.
So basically he's saying, look, we don't have the Indian support we thought we had.
Yep.
There are companies, multinational companies or companies from overseas that would maybe be put off by sponsoring something that's so explicitly Indian,
single-minded,
but like
in a way.
not Indian as in like a racist. Like, I mean, from the point of view, like if you're a company that doesn't have a massive presence in India, sponsoring a team with India in the name doesn't really serve your brand purpose necessarily.
Yeah, especially if you're, you know, a Pakistani company or something
sure.
like that.
All right, fair enough. Okay, maybe there is that.
Hey,
element.
I'm Indian, guys. Why do you think my name's Raj? I'm allowed to say this shit.
Yeah,
damn.
Yeah, look at the podcast picture. That we have an Indian on the show. We can say whatever we want. We have permission from
exactly.
VJ himself.
From yeah, that's right. That's right.
I would like to see it happen. Just for the sake of interest. Like, I just think it would be kind of cool to see changing up the grid again.
You know, last year they were actually this close to a deal. And by the way, I'm holding my fingers a very small distance away from
visual
each
medium,
other.
Man. Not, this is close, not a visual medium.
This close away from being called Aston Martin Racing.
Wow.
Which was also rumored to be a Red Bull thing. But
they were still not going to get like a quote unquote Aston Martin like development team, or they were going to go much closer to that.
I'm not sure whether it would be just naming rights, whether they would keep Force India's engineering team the way it is. Mm. But that would be pretty damn cool to see Aston Martin at the name back in Formula One.
Sure.
But yeah, we'll see what happens, I guess.
Later development. But we won't see anything this year, I'd say. I don't think they'd really want to... do you know how long that sponsorship deal is with BWT?
BWM,
BWM? I thought it was BWT.
I'm not sure. No,
yeah, the pink cars. We don't know.
No, I don't know.
So we might not see anything till that sort of lapses, because that's the biggest funding they have, really, in terms of
sponsorship. Here's another bit of Malia quote. I'm considering, along with other shareholders, what steps to take, but it's a major decision and one that is not going to happen without due consideration.
Sure.
So it's going to take
a
while.
And they've done many. They've been Spyker in the past. They were Jordan.
Midland.
Yeah.
Jordan. Yeah.
They've had their name changed many a times. Yep. It's not a crazy, out-of-this-world idea.
Not at all.
Raj, I got another story for you.
Sure.
This is a kind of an uplifting one. You know the story of Billy Monger? Monger?
Yep.
Of course, if you don't know, that was a Formula 4. Raj is dying over there. Are you all right? You're good?
No, I'm fine.
Billy Monger, he was a Formula 4? Formula 3? Formula 4 driver, I believe it was.
I think it was F4.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
British young guy. He was like 15, 14, 15.
16.
Really young kid racing, and it was a horrific accident that he suffered in a support race for the... Touring Championship in Britain. Mm-hmm. Lost both his legs a couple of days after this massive accident. I would recommend never seeing that footage, because it's absolutely horrifying.
Oh, I have seen it. It made me ill.
Me too. I couldn't turn away. And as soon as I saw it and found out like that he was in a coma for a short amount of time, and then he was losing his legs, like that story really, I latched onto that. A lot of support from the F1 community. But this right here, really uplifting news to see. And it's a picture one of the first pictures I've seen since the incident. He's joined the... Let me try and pronounce this. Frederic Sousset. It's a French guy here. He's a quadruple amputee who has launched an academy for disabled drivers to basically get into Le Mans racing.
That is cool.
Yeah, and Billy Monger has been brought on to do a couple of years training. They're trying to get the sponsorship to be racing in the 2020 Le Mans 24-hour race. Mm. So not that far away. We could be seeing not only Billy Monger, but other disabled and otherwise able drivers in a fully fledged racing team.
That would be
with a really good chance. If they can get a good quality car one of those categories, that would be amazing.
I would love to see it, but I want to see a disabled driver who's just as quick as an able driver. Mm. An able-bodied driver. Mm. In fact, I would love to see someone who has no legs kick someone's ass who has full function of their body. I think that would be the greatest kind of story in motorsport. But all luck to the guy.
Yeah.
This might actually work in his benefit. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the guy who founded this, Frederic Sousset, I'm so pronouncing this incorrectly, but he's actually raced Le Mans himself. He thinks it's perfectly possible, and he's not only missing both legs, but he's missing both arms. I've seen there is a driver in Britain whose name is escaping me. If I can find the video, I'll share it on our show notes. He can drift a car better than most people, and he's missing both his arms. And I think one leg even.
How
it's
does he
crazy.
Steer?
It's a lot of modifications need to be done to make this doable.
Yeah.
Of course, it's probably easier if you are missing your legs, because you can get your accelerator and your brake maybe in hand's reach.
Mm.
But if we can see any single driver or a team out there competing in Le Mans competitively, that's awesome. And that it's is such awesome. An uplifting story that Billy Monger, he's still got such an awesome outlook on life, it seems. He's quoted as basically saying, I'm super excited. He credits so many people for his pretty dramatic turnaround, you know, major accident, and he's already back and signing contracts with driving teams.
Yeah, 2 weeks after the accident, he was doing some motivational talks for students. So yeah, I was like, wow, this guy's amazing.
Yeah, props to this kid. I'm so young, and it's awesome that the F1 community got around him, donated a bunch of money, donated a lot of their time and support, so... love to see him in 2 or 3 years from now competing in Le Mans or anywhere else for that matter.
Yeah, for sure.
You got another story for us, Raj?
Yeah, man. Continuing on our Le Mans theme for a little while, I've got a bit of off-topic news here. Movable aero is among the 2020 LMP1 regulation changes, LMP1 being the top league of sports car racing in the world. It's what Le Mans, essentially, what everyone watches Le Mans for. The fastest sports cars in the world.
They're the ones that win almost every year.
Yeah.
And almost lost this year, but almost every year they won it pretty much every year.
Hey, we'll get into that. You're spoiling my 24-hour section. Anyway, but movable aero is something that's been mentioned in Formula 1 quite a lot. In other words, aerodynamic devices like front wing, rear wing, this, that, and the other, that can literally move.
So depending if you're coming up to a straight or a certain corner, it's basically going to move accordingly to where the aero should or, you know, most effectively going to go.
I mean, just for one example, for example, if you're heading down the straight, all of your flaps would flatten out, reducing their drag, reducing the downforce, and thereby increasing top speed. As soon as you get to the corner and you hit the brakes, all of the flaps then go back up, maximizing downforce.
So sort of like DRS, but... over the whole car as opposed to just your wing.
Yeah, over the whole car, and it's active. In other words, it can be planned to move around the track. That being said, the regulations haven't really been confirmed yet, so it may not be an actively movable system that can be plotted corner to corner. It might just be on
GPS?
The straights. It might literally be just like DRS.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking they're going to be a little bit kind of more advanced than that, but we'll get into it. So movable aerodynamics, weirdly enough, in F1, the reason it was banned to begin with was cost cutting.
Right. So this was back when the Williams did it initially. Am I correct in saying Williams were one of the first?
I don't actually know who did the movable aero first. Williams did active suspension first.
Active suspension. So similar in terms of moving parts inside your car, but
basically. Yeah. Yeah, actively moving parts in the car.
Which, of course, was
that are
very
pre-programmed.
Expensive, yeah.
It was insanely expensive, and so was movable aero at the time. Mm. Nowadays, on the other hand, it would actually be cheaper to put movable aero parts on the car because then you don't have to make multiple aero kits because the car can change its aerodynamic configuration halfway around the lap. So why do you need to develop
so many
different aero setups when there's one car that can do the job?
Right, okay, fair enough.
And now because the computerized parts behind it are so much cheaper, it actually would be cheaper. So we've moved into a position where aerodynamics, like movable aerodynamics, active suspension, all of those kind of things, which in the early 90s were prohibitively expensive, and now actually getting really cost competitive.
So would that also be the case for F1 if they wanted to step into that sort of direction? It would be potentially cheaper.
Yeah.
Because that's one thing that F1 are currently always looking at. That's what a lot of the working groups are trying to determine the best way to keep the racing at a high quality, but make it less prohibitively expensive for smaller teams or mid-range teams to A, compete, and B, stay around.
No, absolutely.
So that's that's pretty interesting that you've got all this historical F1, like, no, you are not allowed to do that. And now all of a sudden they're like, actually, we should probably welcome that change.
Definitely.
Very interesting. Potentially, we'll see something over the next little while. More news to come on that one. Raj, I got another story for you.
Yep.
This is, I guess, nothing confirmed, of course. Massa has basically come out and said, I'm probably ready to stay in F1 for next year as well.
I saw that one.
Weird. Of course, he retired last year.
Yeah.
And if you don't know, he'll be racing this weekend. So he basically had his retirement stolen indirectly because Nico Rosberg threw his retirement right at the very end of the season. That led to a chain effect where the Williams driver Bottas moved up to Mercedes. Mercedes now have a great team, but Williams is one short. Bottas now has to come back to have an experienced driver in their team. And now it looks like he could be doing another year as well. Why do you think this is? Do you think that it's because Stroll maybe not quite ready after only 1 year? Of course, he had a great race in Canada, but, you know, is that enough?
I think it has something to do with it. Definitely, Stroll's taking a bit longer to kind of find his feet, I think, than most people thought.
Mm.
So they do want an experienced driver in one of those seats.
Sure.
They're not willing to throw in another rookie. They would shoot themselves in the foot. You need one good driver to be driving the development of that car.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's to do with that. I also think it's to do with the fact that he's having a goddamn ball.
Mm.
He's loving these new cars. He's loving the high downforce. Yeah.
Except for Canada. I mean, he's been relatively competitive as well.
He has been.
He hasn't slowed down by any means. So,
yeah,
I could see him just wanting to be in there because, well, you know, it's a lot of fun.
And they're going to have to offer me a ridiculously competitive salary.
Exactly.
Why not?
They don't have many other drivers to throw in there. Although I heard Palmer might be free next year. Maybe we'll see. You're giving me a look like that's a bad idea.
Don't joke about it.
Yeah, fair enough.
You've cursed everything. It's done. We're going to see Palmer in a Mercedes next year.
I think we'll see Massa next year. I think he'll stay.
I think he will too.
I think he will. We won't hear anything till the end of the season, but I do think he'll stay.
You know what though? I'd really love for them to give Alex Lynn a go, who was one of their young drivers. He got passed over, and then he's basically been forced into Formula E, I think.
Right.
But he was a great driver, and I really think they should have gone with him instead of Lance Stroll. And if Massa does decide to hang up his boots, put Alex Lynn in the car.
There's going to be a lot of people putting up their hand. That's definitely for sure. It's just a matter of whether or not they can balance that experience with risk, I guess. There is a risk with taking an inexperienced driver.
I think it's
could pay off, could fail miserably.
I think it's time for Pastor.
Pastor to come back.
Pastor needs to come back now.
Look, I'm never going to complain.
It's the only logical solution.
Look, Williams are complaining that it's a bit expensive in F1. If you start crashing your cars three times a weekend, it might get a little bit worse.
Yeah, they got Stroll funding.
Yeah, well, that's true. Stroll can only cover the cars he breaks.
That's true. That's true.
Raj, you have another story?
No, I don't, actually.
No, you don't? I've got heaps of stories.
This week was really dead for me.
All right, I'm going to go with another one. How about this? Listen to this. Listen to this noise. Imola has received its approval to host Formula One again.
Yes, I heard.
Yeah.
Amazing. Awesome.
FIA have said it's all good. It's a matter of now, I guess, sorting out a Grand Prix. Of course, they'd love to have it there again. If you don't know Imola, classic track. It's been around for a long time, but, you know, not so much recently. It is the reason that Senna is dead.
Yeah. Well, and Roland Ratzenberger. Yeah. No one ever remembers Ratzenberger.
Of course, one of the darkest days in motorsports. Two F1 drivers died in a single race weekend at Imola.
It was horrific.
So there's not too many fond memories at Imola other than it being an amazing track.
Seriously though, guys.
Make it safe and drive there, please.
If you're a younger fan of F1 who's never seen the San Marino Grand Prix, never seen Imola, that track is fantastic. It is insanely technical, very, very challenging. The drivers love it. We love it. Great passing. Really, there's nothing bad about it. So I'm hoping it comes back.
Maybe a alternating year thing, because of course, you know, you'd have multiple in the same country if you brought it back in by itself. Maybe every second year you'd bounce between the two.
They had at one point in time, they had an Italian Grand Prix and a San Marino Grand Prix running.
Okay,
simultaneously.
So
it's possible.
We'll see what Liberty Media decide to do, if anything, with that one. But I know the owner of Imola basically said, we are super excited about this. Our first priority is getting anything here, like, of the top quality.
Yeah.
But, of course, we'd love a Grand Prix. But, you know, let's see in the next year or two, they might just start picking up more and more races to show F1, hey, remember how awesome we are.
Brayden, I think we're going to have a lot more stories like that, actually, with, you know, Liberty being so open about the fact that they're thinking of adding up to 5 circuits to the calendar.
Everyone who owns a track is quickly build those seats. Put the chicanes in. Quick.
Yep.
Hey, Liberty, we're done.
And especially heritage circuits like Brands Hatch, Zandvoort, Paul Ricard is coming back next year as well.
Yeah, a lot of these tracks are not Formula One ready. They are literally just one tier down, though. So
it doesn't
take much to be Formula One ready if you're that close. I mean, it takes a huge amount to build a track that's ready for
Formula One, but they're close. FIA Grade 2.
Yeah.
In other words, they need to be FIA Grade 1.
Really interesting read if you ever want to check the Wikipedia page. If we're out there, haven't, like, check the, like, requirements and why certain tracks aren't on there. One of my favorites is, like, Bathurst. The reason why Bathurst, it's like way too far away from an international airport. Every corner is a death trap.
Yep.
There's like no runoff. The hills are just intense. Like, I love what, like, these tracks are like, we race here, but F1, no, for these reasons.
really it's good crazy read. Though, because like they put GT3 around there and GT, I think GTE maybe around a little bit
they
around there.
They put Formula Forward and Formula, like, you can ride, you can drive a Formula car around there, but
which are less safe than F1 cars. So I think it's a pile of bullshit, to be honest. I'd love to see F1 cars race around Bathurst.
F1 cars are too too low to the ground. You go around certain corners and you'll just bottom out every time.
Oh my God, just give it hydraulics, bro.
Oh, okay. Good suggestion. I will pass that on. We should pass you on to Liberty. Like, Raj has a suggestion. More hydraulics, bro. Active suspension. You got to boost up as you go over the hills.
Oh, fully active. Oh my God.
All right. I got one more news story as well. Again, about tracks. Something here. This, of course, is an important one. The provisional calendar for next year.
Oh, yeah.
We've got to finish up on this one. They've come out and they've said, this is what we're looking at for next year's calendar. Fair bit of changing. Of course, we're seeing Germany come back.
Yep.
And we're seeing France come back.
Yep. 21 race calendar, guys.
We are dropping Malaysia.
Yeah.
On a side note,
that sucks.
I did see that Malaysia said if racing gets competitive over the next few years, we might look at coming back. But at least for next year, they're out. Probably a couple of years. One thing they did note is we're going to have a triple header weekends. So 3 weekends in a row with races.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's intense.
Yeah.
That's going to be a burden on our podcast. We're going to have race preview, race review, race preview. Like that next year's going to be intense over those 3 weeks. That's mainly to fit around the Le Mans clash that they used to have. They don't want Le Mans clashing, which is a good point. I liked that they didn't do that this year. But we're going to have the French Grand Prix immediately after Le Mans for one. And then you're also going to have, I think it's the Azerbaijan. You're going to have France, Austria, and Great Britain. All 3 right after each other, weekend by weekend. Right in the middle of the year.
And they're pretty good tracks too. That's nice.
Yeah.
I like it, but I'm also like, that is... How am I going to be able to watch all those races without another event coming up? I have a feeling I'm going to have to write off 3 weeks.
I don't
of my
mind
life
having a week off every now and then from like having a commitment at 10 o'clock that night to watch F1.
Yeah.
Like I kind of like the hype of, okay, I got a week off. Cool. I get hyped about the next week, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And as you said, we shouldn't make this NASCAR. Like I don't even give a shit. If I miss one NASCAR race, and I follow NASCAR, by the way. If I miss one NASCAR race, I don't even care. I just look up the results and that's that, and I don't even need to watch it.
A lot of people are trying to compare it to like, oh, but soccer's on every weekend and football and rugby and all these sports. It's like, yeah, but I can watch footy every weekend and it takes 80 minutes. My point is like a Formula One race is 2 hours, so it's already longer than one peak. Plus,
that's
you've got practice times 3 and qualifying session. It's a whole weekend. You can't compare that. It's a much bigger scale from an organizational point of view and a time commitment if you want to watch it. So
no, absolutely. And you're it's an event.
Mm.
Go to a Grand Prix and tell me, oh, it's just like a soccer game. You're full of shit.
It's totally different. You can
totally
walk up
different
to a soccer match like, oh, do you want to go to the soccer? It's on in 20 minutes. Yeah, sure. F1 you've planned out for most of the year to go
to. Exactly.
The other couple of changes, they brought Azerbaijan a little bit earlier, so we would have already had watched it if it was this year, this time next year.
And by the way, that 3 weeks in a row thing is to actually avoid a Le Mans clash, by the way.
Yeah, no, exactly, which is crazy. So you got Le Mans and then 3 weeks of F1 if you're a big motorsport fan. The other thing is Russia has been pushed back to after Singapore. And then,
what, really?
Yeah, Russia. It goes Italy and then Singapore, Russia, Japan. So that's kind of so Russia's sort of taken Malaysia's spot, moved back there. So that's going to change the dynamic of that race potentially with, I don't know, seasonal. I don't know. What's the weather in Russia like in September? Is it a lot different to earlier in the year? I don't know. Cold and grey.
Minus 30? I don't know.
Anyway, a couple of little changes like that. But mainly the triple header and Azerbaijan and Russia changing. But that is provisional. So we could see changes. Oh, man. Do you reckon it's too late to add anything else? Probably.
It is too
late.
Way too late. Also, Paul Ricard coming back. Guys, I don't know if you ever heard of that circuit. It hasn't held a Formula One race since 1990 or so.
We're coming back on the 24th of June.
24th of June. There you go. Paul Ricard, otherwise known as Le Castellet. Several series still drive there, and F1 tests there fairly often.
It's got one of the longest straights, or had one of the longest straights before they put in a weird chicane.
Well,
but it's still ridiculous.
No one
long
uses his chicane except for F1.
Yeah, because we've got to slow him down somehow.
No, yeah, it's called the Mistral Straight, one of the coolest straights in Europe. But yeah, they've broken it up with a chicane. It is a high-speed chicane, so, you know.
I'm excited. Anything, like, I haven't seen a race at that track at all, you know? I've seen Imola from, like, past, like, recordings.
You'll like it.
I've never seen one there, so
you'll
very
like
excited
it
for next year. And the return of Germany, because that's a great track as well.
Well, because Nürburgring or Hockenheim? I'm pretty sure it was Hockenheim.
It's Hockenheim, yeah. It's Hockenheim.
Yeah, okay, that's good, because I hate the Nürburgring Grand Prix circuit. Boring as hell.
Yeah.
Love Hockenheim, though.
Yeah, so,
yeah,
so glad exciting for next year. Raj, let's get into some other motorsports. You're going to give us like a wrap-up of the weekend that was Le Mans.
I was.
Because you watched
I
way
was,
too much
I
of
am.
It. You are.
I will.
You will? Please don't make it 24 hours long.
I won't.
So, Raj, I caught a couple hours of Le Mans, mainly the middle of the night in Le Mans. So, yep. Very weird watching middle of the night racing that's not Singapore or something with massive lights going.
Yeah.
It's actually dark. Like, it's hard to tell what car you're looking at with the headlights and everything. Quickly, like, my reaction was, I like some stuff about Le Mans, mainly that you get to see engineers sleeping in the garage. That's just a funny sight.
That's that's one of the coolest things. Or just engineers sprawled out on the ground.
Wake me up if we need to do something.
Knocked out. Le Mans is an endurance event, people. If you don't know, the 24 hours of Le Mans goes over the period of, guess, 24 hours.
Is that the longest race we, like, would... There is? I mean, besides multi-day, like, with sleeping breaks, you know, those, like, rally car...
Yeah,
rally
goes except
for days,
rallies,
but,
the Dakar rally or whatever. Yeah, this longest, is the longest, like, single race.
Crazy.
It's part of a championship called the World Endurance Championship, or WEC. It's actually where Mark Webber went after he left F1.
And a lot of F1 drivers, because there was a few
A
this
lot
year,
of F1
course,
drivers, yes, of course. So, you might have heard of Kamui Kobayashi, who drives for Toyota, was a great, exciting driver.
Nakajima.
And Kazuki Nakajima, yes. So, they both drive for Toyota. Essentially, the World Endurance Championship is the premier endurance racing championship of the world. Most of the races are 6 hours long, except for one in the middle of the year worth double points called the 24 Hours of Le Mans. Yeah.
So, if you watched our other episode, where's the cameras? Listen to one of our previous episodes called the Double Crown of Motorsports. This is the third of those three crowns. So, if you win Le Mans, Monaco and IndyCar, you've got the triple crown.
The Indy 500.
Indy 500, yes. Yeah. So you've got the triple crown. There's only one guy that's ever done it. So this is a really big race. A lot of drivers, including Fernando Alonso, were paying pretty close attention because their careers will, as you said, F1 drivers like to go there after their careers. Or in the case of someone like Nico Hülkenberg, have actually gone there and
during
won.
During their career.
Yeah,
exactly.
During their F1 career. So if you're a motorsport fan of any sort, even like myself, who I was never going to watch as many hours as you did, really interesting to watch. The race.
It is. And honestly, the first time I'd been following F1 for what, 5-6 years before I watched my first 24 hours, purely because I'm like, yo, it's just like, God, it's 24 friggin' hours.
You don't have to watch
this?
Them all, guys. You can watch the highlights. You can just tune in and out, like come
indeed.
In at the beginning, come in at the end. Try and watch the end. I watched the end post the race. It's very interesting the last
honestly,
couple
guys,
of hours.
I reckon once it gets to nighttime, because the race generally starts around noon. Once it gets to the nighttime hours and all of the mechanics are kind of delirious, haven't slept in ages, the drivers are the same, and that race starts getting ridiculously interesting. And you're talking about cars that can lap a certain circuit about 10 seconds off F1 time. Or around Le Mans, there would be 10 seconds difference.
Yeah, for a whole
for 24 hours.
One thing I should say, if this sounds like absolutely crazy to you, you've never even heard of Le Mans, then it's not one driver driving for 24 hours. They are teams of four. Every class is teams
three
of four.
Or
three
four.
Or four. It's up to you, I guess. So you take turns. You don't have to. You have to take turns for safety concerns.
Sorry, I don't know if it's four, two, or three. I know you're allowed to have two.
Yeah. Okay, so you can go as small as two, but I think there were teams of four. One or two for certain classes.
There were some. Like, there were four people up on the podium per team, but only three drivers.
Most of the time,
drivers.
One's like a reserve that just kind of is there in case someone
gets
injured.
Yeah, or in the case of... by the way, I might as well get to the results now.
No, I'll really, really quickly go for one thing. If you haven't seen this, there's also four different races going on at once. So
Multi-class
super confusing.
Racing. Sorry, yes. In Le Mans, you have four different classes of cars all competing on the same track at the same time. You have LMP1 or Le Mans Prototype 1. You have LMP2, which is slightly slower. You then have GTE Pro, which is essentially GTE cars. They're essentially GT3 cars with a bit more downforce. So you got GTE Pro, meaning with pro drivers, and GTE Am, which needs one driver who has never, ever competed at Le Mans before.
Right. Okay, that's interesting.
But you can have other experienced drivers in the car.
So is the two GT classes, they're pretty much competing side by side. Their cars are pretty much spec'd up the same?
They are identical.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So the one thing, yeah, you're racing each other across classes, so you can win Le Mans overall, which is almost always an LMP1 car because they're just the fastest.
Yeah.
But it's really quite cool to watch these because there are cars that'll just go right past your ear as you're driving because you're in a GT class.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, an LMP1 car, it's like a whole nother level.
It is insane.
They'll lap hundreds of laps more over the 24 hours. Like, plenty more. But if you've never seen an endurance race of any sort, or a WEC race, I know my girlfriend was, she came into the room, and I was like, this race goes for 24 hours. She's like, what the fuck? That's crazy. And I was like, yeah, see? And then she just looked at it for half a second and goes, I don't understand. There's like 7 different types of cars on the track right now. It's not just like they're different looking. They are dramatically different cars.
Yeah, oh no, they're hugely different cars. I mean, again, one is a road car. So the GTE category,
it's like
whether
a Porsche,
it be Pro or Am, are Porsche 911s, Chevy Corvettes, you've got
some
Ford
GTs,
Ferrari 588s. Mm.
Even those ones, they're the same class, but they look dramatically different, which is so cool. I love, I normally watch F1, but that is so cool to see two different styles of sports cars going up against each other.
No, for sure. And you're talking really freaking different. The power difference from GTE, like a GTE car will have 500 horsepower.
Mm.
At one point in time, LMP2 used to have the exact same engine. So the only difference was the looks, the aerodynamics.
Yeah, they're like a single pod
this year,
thing.
Yeah. But this year they gave them 600.
So they're way faster.
Yeah. So the LMP1 cars, on the other hand, under full harvesting and they're hybrid cars. Mm. So under full distribution of that electrical power, they'll be up around 1,000 horsepower.
Mm.
So you got cars that can do 500 horsepower, cars that have 1,000 horsepower. And if you don't understand what kind of speed difference that results in, go watch
Le Mans. 5 minutes of Le Mans because you'll see them pass each other a lot.
It's batshit
crazy.
And
it is kind of dangerous. Like, it causes incidents because you've just got a car coming up behind you that's so much faster.
Yeah.
You got to be aware of every type of car that's on that track.
And think about
crazy.
Like a GTE AM driver who's got a GTE Pro trying to lap him. He's got an LMP2
he's never been there
driver behind that trying to lap him. He's never been there before. And then right behind all of that comes an LMP1 car with 400 more horsepower than anything else around it and just goes... And will
zooming in and out.
Zoom past you.
It's like when you go down the highway and there's one dickhead going 100Ks over everyone else to zoom in and out of traffic.
Pretty much.
Anyway, we've explained what Le Mans is.
Yes.
What happened this year? Because pretty crazy results.
So, yeah, I mean, look, I'm just going to get straight to the results and I'll explain bits and pieces of how it happened along the way. But basically, veteran driver Timo Bernard led Porsche to a dramatic third straight win at Le Mans for, their third straight win at the 24 Hours of Le Mans. And they just prevented a huge upset with an LMP2 class winning the race outright.
So, yeah, as we just discussed, that shouldn't be happening.
That should not be happening.
They shouldn't even really be coming second.
No.
So it's crazy that they came second, let alone almost won in a dramatically lower spec car.
Yeah, indeed. So, look, put it this way. When I went to bed the night before, so the race started at 11 p.m. I went to bed probably about 3. I went to bed and it was Toyota leading, Toyota second, Porsche third, Toyota fourth.
Mm.
And this year throughout WEC, Toyota has had the edge. Their car is just plain old better than the Porsche.
Mm.
And by the way, LMP1 only had 5 cars in the entire category.
And there were only 2
3
manufacturers,
from Toyota and 2 from Porsche.
Because of course Audi's not in there this year.
Yeah, Audi has left unfortunately. So to be honest, I think this race was, amongst other things, the death of the LMP1 category altogether, but I'll get to that at the end. So I went to bed, Toyota, Toyota, Porsche, Toyota. I woke up, there was one Porsche in the lead, and no Toyotas to be found. And so at that point, I started yelling at everything, at the wall, at anything.
So you were going for Toyota?
Yes! I was going for... And the weird thing was, I'm actually a Porsche fan.
Yeah.
Right? But I'm going for Toyota because I want to see another Japanese maker win the 24.
Mm.
And
in terms of what's happening with Honda in F1, it'd be very good to see the Japanese manufacturers come out and go, we're not all shit, please. You know, like, they need to save save face a little bit for Japanese motorsports.
I think so. So I was really hoping Toyota would get to pull off the win. I mean, considering last year they led the entire race, and guess when their engine failed?
Hour 23 and a half or something?
The last lap.
Oh, that's so brutal.
Yeah.
So like hour 23:59
Literally.
That's a very Honda thing to do.
It's very Honda, but yeah. It's Toyota.
So what happened to Toyota this year? Was it a Honda?
Toyota, so okay, one car. Kamui Kobayashi was driving the number 7 Toyota. He seemed to have a gearbox failure and was reduced to crawling around the track at 60 k's an hour. A little while later, they abandoned the race. Mm. Minutes later, the number 9 Toyota, driven by Nicolas Lapierre, and by the way, there's 3 drivers per car. I'm just naming one driver
lead
from
driver
each of those cars.
Of, yeah.
Yeah, the lead kind of driver. It stopped with flames flying out the back of it because he had a rear tire puncture and that was it. It was done. And the number 8 had been involved in an incident. Let me just wear...
an incident.
My notes are all crap. No, but then the 3rd Toyota basically had a crash. Crashed into another car and was taken out of the race.
Wow.
So
that's
at this
some
point,
really bad luck.
Yeah.
You're playing the numbers game at a certain point and you've just, yeah... destroyed every one of your cars, or they've destroyed themselves in some form or fashion.
Yeah, definitely. The number 8, by the way, managed to get repaired, and it came back out on track about 10 laps off the lead. Mm. And the lap is what, 16 kilometers? So it's a big bloody lap.
Yeah.
So 10 laps is huge. Yeah. So they were basically out of the running.
I like the fact that if you have a major incident early in Le Mans, your engineers can basically do a pit stop and then go, now let's bring you in the garage.
For example,
you'll be five laps down, but you're still well within this race because you've got so much time. Anything can happen just by playing the numbers game.
Hell, look at the number 2 Porsche. It had an issue early in the race with its energy store.
Mm.
Some of the electrical components in the car, they went into the pits. They were in the garage for 2 hours.
Mm.
They came out and they won.
2 hours out of the 24.
Yes.
That's huge.
And they won. So that Timo Bernard I was talking about, along with Brendan Hartley and Earl Bamber, they won with 2 hours where they were standing friggin' still.
I think they were the car at one point. They also did pull over to the side and had to like restart the engine, just like do a whole control alt delete on the
thing
at some point.
No, that's the one.
Or?
That was the number 1 Porsche.
Oh, that was the number 1 Porsche. Okay.
So when I woke up in the morning, the number 1 was leading. The number 2 Porsche was like in literally 50-somethings.
Mm.
They went to last. They went to the back of the field. And the race, the commentators actually at one point said, well, why are they even bothering? What's the point? And then the other commentator said, you never know around Le Mans.
Yeah, of course.
And
I mean,
how right he was.
Massive safety cars. Every car in front of you has a similar issue. Over 24 hours, there's just so many variables. I would love to watch, I think they do this generally a bit later in the season. They compress it down to a 6-hour version and they compress it down to like an hour version.
If
you can't stomach all 24 hours.
Yeah.
24 hours divided by 24, there's a lot of highlights to go through. So an hour of Le Mans racing is super interesting because it's just action-packed, a lot of drama. And they do a pretty good job, the endurance racing WEC guys. They turn their 6-hour races into 30-minute highlights if you need something to stomach in a little bit shorter time.
Mm.
Really, really good watching.
Those race edits will be out soon, by the way, guys. So head over to the WEC YouTube page and check them out. With about 3 hours left, though. Oh, no, 4 hours left, I should say. The number 1 Porsche had an oil pressure issue, pulled to the side of the track, and despite a complete electronic reset, the number 1 Porsche was abandoned.
Mm.
So at this point in the race, you have LMP2s leading the race
and one,
outright.
One LMP left, basically.
Two LMP1s. One Toyota limping around in about...
One that actually can do something, really.
And one Porsche who wasn't too far off. So you have the number one Porsche is out of the race. The number 2 was starting to get back into it.
Mm.
And 3 LMP2s were leading the race, which was mind-boggling. I couldn't believe what I was watching.
Have
and
they
at that
ever
point,
won it before?
I was super excited. Possibly back in the day, but I haven't seen
it. Not in recent times.
Not in recent times.
I've ever been aware of.
I was shouting until I was hoarse. I really wanted to see LMP2 win. Unfortunately, the Porsche decided to stay together.
Yeah.
And obviously, if it stayed together, they would win, right? Their pace difference is so huge that all he had to do was keep it on the road, and he did keep it on the road, and they won the race. With about 3 hours left, that's when the number 2 Porsche decided to overtake teenager Laurent. And then about 1 hour to go, Laurent handed over to Tung Ho Pin, who's a Chinese driver.
Okay.
He used to drive in GP2, nearly got into F1 through funding, let's be honest, but he's a decent driver. Mm-hmm. Driving for Jackie Chan DC Racing. I don't even know
any
if
relation
you know this.
To the Jackie Chan.
Yes,
that's great.
So Jackie Chan funded this team
to have Chinese motorsport sort of
presence. Yeah, pretty much. That's so great.
Such a top bloke.
He's an awesome dude. He's an awesome dude. So he has two Chinese drivers in the cars. Tung Ho Pin, as I said, and also Michael Cheung. And those cars had a pretty damn good race, considering one of them, I don't actually know what number it is, but they came
second. The Jackie
second.
Chan one.
The Jackie Chan number one came second.
Yeah. So
overall,
that's a crazy result. Good on them. One thing I did see today, apparently the one who came third
got
disqualified.
Disqualified.
Or such a penalty that he...
story, jeez.
I'm contributing. This is in case you didn't realize, we are both on the podcast picture.
What? Oh, really?
Yes, this is equally ours.
I'm sorry about that, guys. We'll get that rectified for you.
The third place, he either got such a big penalty that he's basically dropped from the podium, or he's been totally disqualified. Why was that? For a technical infringement.
I actually saw their infringement. The last pit stop, one of the last pit stops of the race, if not the last pit stop of their race, it was a Rebellion car, by the way.
Yep.
Jean-Eric Vergne was actually in the car.
XF1 driver.
They came into the pits. They then had their mechanics cut a hole in the bodywork.
What, in the front of the car?
On the side of the car.
Right.
They then got some sort of... I don't know what to call it besides a long stick, right? So a long stick and a hammer, and they put the stick in and they hammered the freaking starter motor, and somehow that
turned it back on.
It did something that fixed an issue, and they managed to go on and come third overall. The only problem is
someone determined that's unsafe.
It's illegal. So you're not...
Because it's seriously unsafe?
It's seriously unsafe, yeah, first of all. Second of all, it is against the rules. In order to work on the inside of the car, you need to take the cover off. You can't just punch holes in your vehicle.
So did the commentators... I didn't catch that part. Did the commentators all say, that's probably going to get called up at all? Or they kind of let that go for a bit?
They did comment on it a little bit. They thought they would be
You've
disqualified.
You've been up too long.
I have been up too long, guys. I'm really tired. But they got disqualified, unfortunately, which then promoted the second Jackie Chan DC Racing to the podium.
Oh, that's great.
It is great.
That Jackie Chan, I don't have really an investment in any of these Le Mans teams, so Jackie Chan, you're my new favorite World Endurance Car Championship car.
Awesome. It's awesome. He's fighting, like kung fu fighting on Le Mans. It's brilliant. But anyway, two cars on the podium, LMP2 overall. That has never freaking happened before. And for Jackie Chan to walk away with second
and
third...
Was he there? Was Jackie Chan himself
I don't know
there?
If he was there.
I want him
on the
podium. I
honestly don't know if he even understands what the hell his team has done.
I don't know if he's a massive motorsports fan.
I don't know either, besides if he just wanted to support Chinese drivers. I really don't know what he wanted. But yeah, anyway, that was that. But I should go through... my final point being... Congratulations, Jackie Chan. Great showing. The other classes, GTE Pro 123 was the 97 car of Turner, Adam and Sarah in an Aston Martin, 2 Prio Ticknell and Durrani in a Ford GT, and Jan Magnussen, who is Kevin Magnussen's dad, by the way, Garcia and Taylor in a Corvette in third. GTE AM had Smith, Stevens, Will Stevens, you'll notice all these names you might recognize, and Van Thor came first in a Ferrari. Second went to Cameron Scott and Chiocci in the Ferrari, and McNeil, Swedler, and Bell were third for Ferrari as well. So those were pretty much the results.
Yeah, we'll post a link to the WEC website because that was a lot of names to absorb.
Yeah.
But yeah, really cool race. I didn't get to watch the whole thing, but I think next year I'll try and commit a bit more time to it, and I'll definitely watch the edit because Le Mans racing is very, very cool.
Yeah.
Raj, I look forward to next week where we can talk about Baku. Hopefully it's going to be an awesome, interesting race for once. As always, you can check us out, backmarkerpodcast.com, backmarkerpod on Twitter, and what's our Facebook? It's Baku Marker Podcast.
I'll see you later, guys.
Yeah, we're out for this week. Thank you very much.